The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Republican New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. He is the leader of the Republicans in the New York State Assembly, if you didn't get it the first time. And I want to tell you, that's not an easy job, is it, Will Barclay?
Some days are better than others, Dr. Chartok. Let me tell you that.
You should call me Alan. Everybody does. Let me ask you this. You are in a significant minority right now. Do you think the fact that the Democrats now have a majority in both houses of the legislature is bad for New Yorkers?
Of course. And it's not just me saying that as a Republican leader in the Assembly. I think we're hearing it from New Yorkers. You've seen an out-migration of over a million people in the last decade. They're moving to better states that have lower taxes, more friendly to business, and know how to protect their citizens. So I do think it's bad that we've seen some of the policies being put forth by the progressives out of New York City are really wreaking havoc on the state.
Has progressives become a bad word?
Yeah. In my mind, it probably was a bad word. I mean, they like progressive, always been a bad word, but, you know, it's really liberal in the political sense of the word. And it's New York City. They've been tracking left. There used to be some balance in the city, but very much the whole metropolitan area has now really moved hard to the left. And as a result, the state legislature has been moved to the left.
Well, with that move hard to the left, how do you deal with that? In other words, you're a Republican. In the old days, when I was a kid, I remember very well going up to the legislature for the first time, and the Republicans had the Senate. It was constitutionally mandated that the Republicans had at least the Senate. And I remember when they had the Assembly, too. So what's happened?
Well, don't you find it interesting when we talk about the changes that we've had, you know, the Voter Right Act back in the 70s or 60s? And one thing that happened was, you know, unlike the U.S. Legislature, Senate, and the Congress, the state legislature, you know, it's all done on population. So it's not like there's a county that has one senator and, you know, and then the assembly would be done like Congress by population. Now everything's done by population. And upstate's lost, you know, whereas traditionally more Republican strongholds has been upstate and in the suburbs. And unfortunately, we've lost population. As a result, our voice has gotten, you know, weaker in Albany. But saying all that, it's sort of maybe a long history lesson, I am very optimistic about this year and about the election this year. I think New Yorkers are waking up to some of these policies that haven't been particularly good for the state. And I think we're going to have a very good year. And whether we take over the majorities, I think it's probably a stretch in the legislature. But I think there's a good chance we may have a Republican governor. And I think there's a very good chance we'll pick up seats in both the Assembly and the Senate.
Well, Will Barclay, have the Democrats made any strategic mistakes? I'm thinking specifically of the way bail has been treated, which seemed to be a good arguing point for the Republicans. Is that so?
Yes, I think exactly. I mean, I think I've talked about this on your show in the past. I don't know if anyone, certainly not myself, I don't know if anyone in our conference was necessarily against looking at bail and trying to reform it to make it more equitable. I think people are open to that. But unfortunately, what happens, we see it way too often in the legislature, is, you know, instead of using a scalpel, they use a chainsaw. And they came in and made drastic changes without consulting, you know, prosecutors, without consulting law enforcement, and just went ahead and did it. And as a result, we're seeing a spike in violent crime. And that's not even New York City. I represent the city of Fulton. A guy there has been arrested now 18 times since November. And, you know, people say they're against three strikes, you're out. What is the right number to be out? And here, it seems like it's endless. So there's a great example where, you know, why don't we bring in judges, judicial discretion on bail reform? Other states that have made reform to bail, like New Jersey, do include judicial discretion. There's something that seems like, you know, a compromise that could be done. But for whatever reason, my colleagues from New York City are unwilling to open it up and even talk about reforming that so-called bail reform.
So meaning what? Judicial discretion that the judge can say, this is a dangerous situation and I have to have the right to keep somebody in jail.
Exactly. Exactly it. And it seems to be common sense. And I mentioned before, you know, interestingly, when we talked about the Rockefeller drug laws, it was all about giving the judges discretion. But now they've changed it so the judges shouldn't have discretion. You know, those two arguments don't necessarily match up.
William Barclay, let's go to redistricting. There are those people who say that when you give the Democratic Party the right to create districts every 10 years, or if the Republicans were in power, they would have it, you have basically made New York a constitutionally Democratic, large D state. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that appears to be what's happened here. You know, back in 2014, the voters approved a constitutional amendment to set up an independent redistricting commission. They were supposed to take politics out of this process and let a so-called independent body decide the maps. As you know, they weren't able to come to an agreement. You know, who's to blame for that, I guess, is anybody's guess. So nevertheless, it's now fallen on the legislature, and you've seen the results of what happens when Democrats have supermajorities in both houses. You see the congressional maps. Jerry Nadler is the one that people point to most. And I say it doesn't take a degree in political science to see what happened there. A man on the street, if you show them the map, they're going to say, of course, that's a gerrymandered map. Just looking at the thing, he has like a barbell. He has, you know, one big spot, one big area, and then a little bridge, and then another big area. Clearly, that's what they're doing, is trying to benefit him so he can win the election.
Tell us a little about that Jerry Nadler gerrymandered district. What does it look like?
That's what I said. If I remember it right, I obviously focus very much on the legislative lines, but in the congressional one, it's like a barbell, I think. It's like one area, and then he's got a little skinny strip of land that connects it to, and, you know, another big area. So they're joining two spots, but, you know, they're supposed to be compact. They're supposed to be contiguous, pursuant to the state constitution. And I think you look at these things, and they're going to have a hard time defending them, I think, because inevitably, I'm sure they'll be sued upon.
Well, if there is a suit, most of the people I've heard on this subject think that it is not violative enough to get the courts to make a change. Do you think there is a possibility the courts will come in and say, no, this redistricting is just too much. We're going to tell you what to do?
Well, I think there's definitely a good argument. I'm an attorney, so I would never predict what a court is going to do. But I've heard that this is the most egregious gerrymandering of any state. And even the Democrats, by the way, the board election commissioner in Onondaga County tweeted the other day saying, well, this is excusable because Republicans are gerrymandering, admitted that this is gerrymandering, but defending it because, you know, the Republicans are supposedly gerrymandering in other states. And I don't think he's alone. I've heard that argument from the Democrats. So it's almost like they're admitting already that that's what they're doing.
Well, if they're doing it, the question is, can they be shut down from doing that? Is there any way out of this?
It'll be litigated. And I think there's a very good chance, again, not predicting what a court would do, but I think there's a very good chance that certainly with the congressional lines of being overturned. Because it looks like those lines were drawn for political purposes, which you're not allowed to do pursuant to the state constitution.
Well, of course, you're exactly right. Whether or not the courts will get involved is another whole story. We remember
right.
that Justice Frankfurter said so long ago that we're going to stay out of the political thicket, meaning we're not going to deal with gerrymandering. But who knows?
Right.
Maybe there'll be a change.
Right.
Let's talk about the budget.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on the governor's proposals? And what do you like? What don't you like? What's missing?
Well, as I always say with these, there's a lot to like, because when you're spending $216 billion, you're proposing to spend that. It's like the good days are here. And how can you say everything's bad when you're spending all that money? But one of the problems we've had in New York State is we're spending a lot of money. I think the state of Florida, which has more population than us, has a budget like $120 billion. And I think Texas is like $170 billion. Why New York, who's a smaller state, are we spending or proposing to spend $216 billion? And when you do that, obviously you have to get that money from somewhere, and we're a high tax state. And as I said in the beginning of the show, because of our high taxes, because of our poor business climate, people are leaving our state. We cannot continue this tax and spend regime that we've been doing the last decade or so and not think there's going to be consequences to it. Clearly there are, and people are, those consequences are people leaving, you know, moving out.
The thing that I don't understand about all of this is, if you're right, if we're spending too much money, if we're taxing too much, wouldn't the Republicans win more races?
Well, sometimes I think we will. Again, I'm very optimistic it will, because I think this is now, people are seeing it. But yeah, unfortunately, for upstate, at least I know, it's the Republicans that tend to be leaving the state. So, again, as I said, people are leaving the state, but our voice is getting weaker because of our population loss. So, but I do think it is starting to resonate. I think people are waking up to the fact that this can't go on. And even in New York City, I hear from people saying, you know, this is getting crazy. And, you know, we can get in a philosophical argument about the progressiveness of the tax system, but even the wealthy who, you know, presumably can afford to pay higher taxes, New York's percentage of millionaires has decreased compared to other states. So clearly even they are leaving the state because they can't, you know, no longer want to pay these high taxes. So there are going to be consequences. I think eventually there'll be political consequences too.
Will Barclay, is there anything in the governor's budget that really offends you?
Well, nothing. I'm like, oh my God, I'm shocked that this is happening. But again, it's more the overall kind of idea that we're just going to spend. You know, I'd like to see, one thing I'd like to see is more tax cuts. We're pushing with the inflation going to 8% last year. We haven't had this high of inflation since the 70s. Middle class and lower middle class families are hurting. I'd like to see it take the state sales tax off of things like gas, home products, out of the home food products, ready to eat food products, because that would save New Yorkers right away. Do you know, for a family of four, I saw a statistic, because of the increase in inflation, it's cost them something like $5,000 more a year. So people need that type of relief. That's what I'd like to see in this budget. I'd like to see those together. I know she's going to bring the middle class tax cut, speed that up, I think, to have it take effect this year, which is great. But we need to do more of that.
Let me ask you, how is she doing? I mean, no, she's the governor now, and my assessment is that she has a lot of people in the middle and upper middle class for her. Now, those are potential Republican voters. What kind of grade would you give her?
Well, I'll say this, and I think I've mentioned this. I had high hopes for her, and I even told her I would be willing to work with her anywhere we could in a bipartisan manner, understanding that we're probably going to disagree on a lot of issues. And when I spoke with her, she said that seemed great. And she said, you know, I am an upstater. I represented, when she was in Congress, a rural district. She said, I understand those issues. I said, great. Clearly, with her running for reelection, she feels that she has to win over the progressives. So she's clearly moved, whether she believes it or not, I don't know, but she's clearly moved to the left to try to, you know, survive this primary. From a political perspective or strategy, you know, maybe I'd give her a good grade. Seems like from that standpoint, but from a policy standpoint, I think those are, you know, she hasn't done what she ought to be doing. I mean, again, let's talk about crime. Why isn't she talking about bail reform? She seems to dodge that whenever she can and tries to change the topic and say, you know, it's because of illegal guns or something in New York, which is a problem, I admit, but that's not what's causing this recent spike in crime. Why didn't she talk about the high cost of doing business in New York instead of just proposing more of the same that we've done over the last decade? So I give her a low grade. I will continue to give her a low grade until she changes the trajectory that our state's been on. And I just don't think she's been the leader to do that, unfortunately.
You've endorsed Lee Zeldin. Not many people like me, political scientists and others, think Zeldin has much of a chance. Do you?
I do. I do, for the reasons I've said. I think New Yorkers are waking up to the policies that have brought us to the problems that we're having in the state. I think Lee has articulated policies of change, and I think people will gravitate towards that. The hard part about politics, as you're well aware of, it takes a lot of money to get your message out there. And I think his challenge is going to be getting people out there to know him and hear his message. But I think he's raised something like $8 million so far. So that's pretty good compared to any other Republican candidate in the recent past. So I'm optimistic. It seems like he's doing a good job in that regard. I'm optimistic that will allow him to get his message out.
Well, in New York State, blue state New York, I keep hearing he's a Trumper. Is that right?
I think a Democrat will say anybody's a Trumper because of Trump's unpopularity in the state. I know Lee. When I look at who to endorse, I look to someone with integrity, someone with experience, and someone who's willing to take on tough political issues. And I think that's what Lee has been able to do. Of course, not all those are going to be popular in, you know, maybe downtown Manhattan. But ultimately, I think he's trying to do what's right. And I think that will resonate, particularly upstate.
Will Barclay, is betting on elections legal in New York State?
Yeah, right. Well, it seems like we're betting everything else is. I'd be surprised if we can't bet on elections.
Because I have $5 here. Anyway, let me say there's been some discussion as to Andrew Cuomo's political future. We've talked about it. I'm asking you, do you think there's any way this guy can come back?
Well, politics is crazy, isn't it? I would never say never to anyone. As you know, as I said, money makes a big difference in politics, for better or worse. And he's sitting on a war chest of, I think, of $18 million. So if you have that much money, I would never count anybody out. But I think if you remind voters of some of his record, particularly during the COVID pandemic, I think it would be very hard for him to win statewide again. But I never count anybody out, and particularly with a last name like Cuomo.
Well, you're a good guy. I want to ask you a question. I mean, what do you think? You think he was treated fairly?
Yes, I do.
I'm so surprised.
I think, you know, I mean, I think the harassment claims were very troublesome. But I think the nursing home cover-up with the fatalities and his executive order that put those COVID patients into the nursing homes was really tragic. And that alone, I think, ought to have kept him accountable and ultimately brought about his downfall.
Now, we hear that New York is going to close 6 state prisons. Good idea?
Well, I don't think so. I wonder what's driving that. And again, is it, you know, sort of criminal justice reforms where they don't want to incarcerate anybody? So one way of doing that is not to have the prisons to incarcerate them. And, you know, currently they double bunk a lot of the inmates currently. And that's caused a spike in violence within prison, prisoner on prison violence and prison on correction officer violence. So I think we have to take a really close look to see. Maybe some could possibly close just because of a declining, you know, Democratic population. But just to go out there and say we're going to close 6 without giving the legislature time to review that and having a say on it, I think, and the local communities for that matter, I think is problematic.
Now, Will Barclay, your father was a distinguished legislator. You sat at his knee. What did you learn from him?
Well, I learned a lot. Like I told you, he was in the legislature from 64 to 84, so he was out well before I ever got into it. But I would say he influenced me to want to take on public service. The one thing I think I learned most from him is don't get too caught up in your own thinking, because there are always people out there that have different viewpoints of you, and sometimes you have to be open to those viewpoints. And if you get too hard in them thinking your way is the only way, I think ends up, it's not a successful outcome. So I think he taught me most just to be open to other viewpoints, and sometimes you're not always right.
Leader Barclay, let me ask you this. What do you make of the mask mandate, which is now tied up in the courts? Should we expect somehow people should be told by their government to wear masks to protect their lives?
So, Alan, it's really been an incredible journey, haven't we, been on this pandemic. I think at the beginning of this pandemic, people were willing to trust their government, willing to believe what their leaders were telling them on how to, one, try to prevent getting COVID for yourself individually, but also, you know, trying not to spread COVID, you know, to make it worse pandemic than it was. The problem has been that government has not always been, you know, some of the stuff is based in science, some of it doesn't seem to be based in science. So I think the population is getting suspicious. And we've now, in our third year of COVID, we've had in New York, we've had shutdowns, we've had mask mandates, we have a vaccination mandate. But then in January, we have a spike in COVID cases after all this. So I think it leaves a little bit of distrust, and I understand that distrust in government, whether what government's telling us to do really has any impact on stopping the spread of COVID. And I think the masks are a perfect example of that. I know people that are very concerned. I wear a mask out of, because I think it's a small sacrifice. If people are offended by not wearing a mask, I don't mind putting one on. But then you get into schools, and where it's really having a detrimental effect on school children, is my understanding. And you got to question what the value of requiring masks in school when children's they're getting infected at such a small rate and having any kind of health ramifications from getting infected are so minor that why are we requiring masks in school?
Well, I have a question for you, Will Barclay, as the assembly leader. Do you think that your colleagues in the Republican Party are wearing masks themselves and that their kids are wearing masks? Or do you think that it's a political issue which has been exploited?
Are they wearing masks? I think, anyone in our conference, I think where there's mandated to wear masks, I think most people would wear them because it's mandated to do it. Whether they believe the mask, you'd have to ask individual men, whether you believe masks are not preventing the spread of COVID, I think that's kind of, questionable whether that is happening or not, particularly in schools. I would say particularly in schools. Again, from my personal belief, I don't mind putting one on. It's slightly inconvenient, but, I don't mind the inconvenience if it offends, it stops someone from being offended or, talking to me or whatever. So I don't mind wearing it, but I do question what's the science behind mandating it, and particularly in schools.
Well, that puts us on different sides of this table. Let me ask you this. Shelley Silver, who I knew quite well, has passed. He was in prison. What do you make of that whole tragedy?
I think your description of it is spot on. It is a tragedy. For a guy that was speaker for the length of time he was, maybe that indicates that maybe there ought to be term limits on leadership. But, I think in his heart, he was a progressive, wanted to do right, probably by New York, and was trying to do what he believed was right for New York. But obviously, power can corrupt, and clearly that's what happened with him. And it's a tragedy to see him die in prison. But I guess there are consequences for your actions, and he was a proof of that.
I couldn't agree with you more. But as the leader of your party in the assembly, do you ever sit down with your colleagues and say, look, this was a tragedy, what this guy's succumbed to, don't do it. If you do it, you're going to get into a lot of trouble. Do you ever do that?
I do. We talk about that, and there's nothing that I would think that people are doing in our conference that would give me concern. But I do believe that we could have stronger ethics laws in New York. I do think we could reform the system to make people more accountable. But all that being said, ultimately, it has to be a personal choice, and people should understand that government service is not something you should do to enrich yourself, but rather you should do it to try to make a difference and help your constituents. And I know our conference feels that way. I presume the Democrats feel that way, but unfortunately, you get people and get bad apples, and they ought to be held accountable for their actions. They do that because it gives everybody a bad name.
Do you think ex-President Trump, will run again?
You always ask me that question. You can't leave Trump alone, can you?
No.
I don't know if he'll run again, but I'm not talking about Trump. We're moving on.
Okay.
I don't hear anyone talking about Trump in my conference, all honesty. It seems Democrats ask me about Trump.
For good reason.
What's that?
For good reason they're not asking you about him. Okay, let's talk a little bit. Trump says he would pardon those who participated in the January 6th Capitol riot. Are you for that?
I think that elected officials be held accountable when they do wrong. I think anyone who broke the law ought to be held accountable. I do think January 6th certainly was a tragedy. I think we shouldn't be, charging the Capitol. So I think that's problematic. But I do also think Democrats are trying to use it to their political advantage. So I think there's probably problems on both sides of the January 6th issue.
If you had the choice to make, because you're going to be facing your own elections, would you think that Trump would be the right guy to lead your party when everybody's going to the polls?
I am going to punt on that one because I don't know who the candidates are. I can think there are other candidates out there that I would, you know, I would support. But we'll see who presents themselves and see what issues they present. I've always been pretty clear about Trump's, and I liked a lot of his policies. I didn't like the guy's personality.
Well, let me just say,
I continue to feel that way.
Let me just say, we love having you on, and you've always been a great representative of the Republican philosophy in New York, and we want to make sure that you keep coming back. So if I ever say anything that offends you, I'm sure you'll raise it with me. And thanks so much.
They're good questions, Alan. You would never offend me, I don't think. So I appreciate the questions. I always appreciate being on your show.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Republican Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. William, thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org, or you can even schedule a podcast. Ask for program number 2205. And join us again next week at this same time for another Political Conversation with Alan Chartok. I'm your producer, David Gustino. Thanks for listening.